You are listening to Studying Pixels, a podcast on game studies and video game culture. I'm Stefan Heinrich Simont, a game studies scholar from Germany.
I'm Dan Hughes, a Japanese scholar from Texas.
I'm Richard Burtons, a video game enthusiast from Minnesota.
And you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Richard, we need you urgently on this show, on this episode, because you have got some major experience with lots of horror games, and you've thoroughly played through the Callisto Protocol, just like all three of us have completed it at this point, but not platinumed it, right?
I did platinum the game, and I didn't cheat at all, which is a lie. It is very easy to cheat the platinum system.
Oh, you can cheat to platinum? You really?
Yeah. Okay, I was going to wait a little later into the show to cheat and reveal my the prestige. But if you just resume a finished game, it takes you to a spot where you don't have to fight anyone, and you can just change the difficulty from there. So I just changed it to like maximum difficulty and just ran to the end.
Ah, I see.
I did beat it a couple times, that is true, but before you bring me on as an expert or some sort of
game whiz.
Game whiz. I did beat it, but I did beat the game three times unrelated to any cheating.
And what are your impressions?
Impressions is tricky because I have so many thoughts on it. But honestly, I thought it was okay. I thought it was a really good attempt at feeling that feeling we're all kind of craving in the third person horror genre, I suppose. But it just was a little rough around the edges. That's my teaser to get people to listen to the whole episode, as I'll flush it out later.
I may be more critical in this episode than I've ever been on the show.
Ooh.
Because I definitely see where you're coming from, Richard, and I think that there's a lot of good stuff there. But this is one of the more frustrating gaming experiences I've had in a long time. And I recently played through both Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. So there's a lot to unpack there. But I think that my overall impression was I kind of grew to resent this game.
Okay, that's also a wonderful teaser. Well, my impressions would be that I think in itself, it is a solid game. It's not an excellent game. It's a solid game. It's worthwhile to play through the Callisto Protocol. However, it does try to fill some pretty big footsteps, and it misses quite a lot along the way. So I think that especially in comparison to the inspiration of Dead Space, that's where it primarily falters. But we're going to go into all of our impressions further down this episode. Before we do that, though, I would like to briefly remind you out there that if you like this show, if you get some value out of it, and you want to support us and help us make it happen, then you can do so by joining Studying Pixels Plus. There, you will get all of our episodes entirely ad-free. You'll get a lovely sticker and monthly Plus episodes. If you're curious about that, head over to studyingpixels.com/plus to find out more.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we are back with our review of The Callisto Protocol, a game that, as I found out only by searching for it online, started out as a PUBG spin-off and then became its own thing. It's developed by Striking Distance Studio, directed by Glenn Schofield, who was the former vice president at Visceral Games, the studio that made the Dead Space series. And he also brought on roughly 25 other former Visceral Games employees. So there's quite a lot of knowledge and manpower and woman power involved in making this game that tied into the origins of Dead Space. If you are curious about that particular studio, Visceral Games, and its history, we actually did a full-on Plus episode about it. That episode is called The Rise and Fall of Visceral Games, and we can link it in the show notes. But that's exactly what I meant by saying that it kind of promises to be an off-brand continuation of the legacy of Dead Space, you could say, right?
Definitely. I think I got, I wonder if this tracks with you both, I got ukulele impressions from this game.
You mean like the lizard?
Yeah, oh yeah. Not in the not in the sense that it was anything like Ukulele the game, but the idea that there was this prior series, Banjo-Kazooie in Ukulele's case, that was really beloved by people, and the people who worked on it really loved working on it. So they broke off and they made their own thing. And it was kind of to scattered success, and people have mixed feelings about it. I had that revelation maybe halfway through where I thought, man, this feels so much like Dead Space. I just wish that they had been able to continue that instead of going into this, because it feels so similar at times.
And I feel like it would have been really easy to just do like a reskin of Dead Space. There's a lot of elements that separate it. And with the reskin, it would have been easy to do that, but also like it might have been to their benefit a little bit, because they tried a lot of new things, but it felt like it carried a lot of stuff that made Dead Space feel really dated and brought that over with it. So it didn't feel like an updated version of those games. It felt like trying to reinvent that same game without making it modern. That's kind of the vibe I got about halfway through.
Without getting too different from the source material, which is, I think, it is quite a lot of pressure to work under, because we know that next month the Dead Space remaster is going to come out. So it feels like as if the big promise, or the implicit promise at least, was the Callisto Protocol is kind of going to reinvigorate the genre of space horror. That's at least the promise that I felt was implicit in the announcements of the game and the trailers.
Well, especially at the Game Awards, because this was the big thing. I mean, Jeff Keighley made a whole joke about how it was just every... I'm sorry, not the Game Awards, the Summer Game Show, when it was just one announcement of a space horror game or a space game after the next. And I think that was definitely the idea or the intent behind this. But then, Richard, like you were saying, with the Dead Space remaster coming out, it kind of just makes me say, well, why can't I just be playing Dead Space right now?
Yeah, and I had a lot of issues with things like QuickTime events, and I just felt like, what year is it? Like, why am I mashing buttons all the time? And it is a totally reinvented like combat system, which I'm sure we'll touch on a little more in detail. But I didn't feel like it was more fun or more intuitive or more interesting than just shooting things with a laser. I'm oversimplifying it, of course, but it would bring you into those sort of one-on-one fight in like this a melee sort of arena, which I never really understood. I played the game multiple times, but it never felt super fleshed out or super interesting. And then the second you're fighting more than one enemy, it's like impossible to fight them. And it could have been fixed with some, and maybe it's because I'm a From Software dork, but you could have added lock-on or like even like a shuffle to the side, kind of like a Mortal Shell has, because you get in these very intense camera one-on-one scenarios, but you just have to deal with it. You can't really like move or maneuver. You're just like, well, this is what I'm doing now. And it felt like a really bloated, almost like chore at a certain point, getting into the melee combat when you could just stand far away and shoot at them, which is, you know, in the Dead Space history.
I very much agree with you. But before we go into the combat, I would like to set the narrative stage a little bit. Just to give the framework, since the game is set in 2030-20, 2320, That's correct.
2030-20.
I always mess up the numbers
on the
show.
That's the second time you've done that, yeah.
So it takes place in 2320 on Callisto, which is an actually existing moon of the planet Jupiter. And Jacob, the protagonist, he pilots a freight spaceship. And he just lifted off of Black Iron Prison, because apparently the Callisto, the moon, has been turned into a gigantic prison. However, his spaceship is ambushed and he crashes into Callisto, where, to his surprise, he is then arrested and processed as an inmate. And as soon as he ends up in a cell, at least that's what it feels like in the game, an outbreak starts. Space monster creatures, mutations appear, and the entire slashing and gore splatter begins. So it's a very quick turnaround from crashing on the planet, and then suddenly everything escalates. But this is the kind of setup. And I think the general idea of this space prison on Callisto, I found that a super interesting setting and an interesting atmospheric choice to make. That was certainly one of its strong points, I would say.
I agree with that. I liked that there was a lot of good background storytelling. Like there's the UJC, which is this sort of, it seems like an oppressive kind of government or even just corporation, cyberpunk kind of thing that controls all of Jupiter's moons and all of the freight that goes between them. And so it definitely felt, it reminded me kind of like of the movie Alien or Aliens in that sense, where there's just this big corporation that runs everything in space, and it's kind of a no man's land out there. So I agree with you, Stefan. I like the setting. I think that you alluded to it. It really throws you in. It's breakneck at the beginning. The exposition to get you to the outbreak is kind of mile a minute, to the point where I found myself thinking, I wonder if this was considered as you start in the prison and you unravel why you're there or why you shouldn't be there, because it felt like it was very quick to get to that point.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense, especially coming from, you know, people who worked on Dead Space, because making Isaac Clarke an engineer, they kind of had a super easy way to shoehorn him into basically any situation. Like, he's on a ship, he's on it, you know, he's doing this, he's fixing something. They really hit the nail on the head with sort of like the adaptability of that character. And now he can show up anywhere. So if you have to get back to that level, I think you have to do it breakneck. Like, you can't make him, like, you can't give his whole, like, family dynamic and make you fall in love with the character before the game starts, because it's like, maybe they're not used to doing that sort of things, those team members from Visceral, excuse me. Maybe they just have to get you going, have to get you in the door, and then, like, good luck in there, and then slam it shut behind you.
Yeah, that's also what I noticed. And I kind of feel very ambivalent about it, because I do think that this setup of the space prison is generally super interesting. And I noticed they allude to such concepts like the Panopticon, like total surveillance prison. And that's super interesting. However, it doesn't really play any real role. It's not of any primary significance. And one major drawback of making it so breakneck, of just immediately saying, you crash, you're an inmate now, and here's the outbreak. It kind of leaves a lot on the table, a lot to be desired when it comes to... I have never had the feeling of this prison was actually lived in, or there was actually stuff that happened here. I only see it once it was already past the outbreak. And I think in Dead Space that worked, because you came on the space station and you knew it was like... it had completely fallen apart and you're discovering traces of the catastrophe. But in Callisto Protocol, you're in the catastrophe, you're in the middle of the catastrophe. And that would have had, for my personal tastes at least, more weight if I would have had, let's say, knowledge of any kind of other inmate that might have been around, or if I would have understood the prison dynamics a little bit more.
You're thrown right into, you see everything in the aftermath when the outbreak has happened of this horrible virus. And I think that one of the strengths of the game that I appreciated, that I think when a certain thing happens is when I started to lose my personal investment. There's a character named Elias who is that character. He's a prisoner. He says he's been there for a long time. He knows everything inside and out. He's the one that's kind of guiding you through the prison. And I feel like they put all of the lived-in-ness into that character. And I really liked him. So, you know, without getting too much into spoilers, when he is no longer around in any capacity, I felt kind of lost.
Yeah, I understand that. I think I just would have loved to have like a sequence. Let's see, it could be like almost a tutorial thing where you go into a prison canteen and you learn how to, I don't know, these simple things. You pick up a couple of items or something and you talk to a couple of inmates, just a little bit of, you know, setting the stage. Think of The Last of Us, when you play as Sarah at the beginning of the game and you just learn the basic mechanics and you're getting accustomed to how peaceful things are, and then you see like on the horizon there's this catastrophe coming along. I think that would have been something that I would have really liked in the Callisto Protocol.
I think you can count all the NPCs in like one hand. Not to be a spoiler or anything, but I understand it's a prison, so maybe they're locked up. I don't know what their excuse for that was. But once you kind of realize how empty it is, it's cool that it's in a prison. I think that's like a very interesting setting. But at a certain point, would it work? Does it have to be a prison? I guess is my point. Because with being so isolated, nothing makes it interesting that it's a prison. It could be anywhere. Anywhere that you're isolated would have fit just the same.
Well, Stefan, to your point, because Richard, that's spot on, right? Why is it in a prison? And there's, I would say, a loose reason based on who Jacob Lee, the main character played by Josh Duhamel, is. But do they even reference the word panopticon? I feel like they do at one point.
Yeah, once. Mm-hmm.
So they bring that up, like this prison that is completely surveilled by the warden. And I thought that was going to go somewhere. And then the warden just kind of went in a total different direction at the end of the game. So it does feel like, why couldn't this have been Scientist Man in a lab? It didn't need to be in a prison necessarily.
What did you think, though, of Jacob Lee as a character? Because Isaac Clarke in Dead Space has, like, for the most part, been a quite faceless protagonist. He did get a face. And his face played a bit more of a role in the second game. He also often had his face destroyed. But Jacob is a lot more front and center, I feel like. The cutscenes are more elaborate. You see his face almost constantly. He often like looks over the shoulder a little bit and glimpses almost in the direction of the camera. So he's a lot more present as a fleshed out character.
I think he was serviceable. I think that it was... I don't know why you get... Josh Duhamel is a big actor. Like, he's in all those Transformers movies. He's a good actor. And I just felt like not only him, but Karen Fukuhara in the role of Danny Nakamura. I also felt like, why... I just never felt like they got enough to do. It felt very straightforward. They were there to accomplish something, almost like an Isaac Clarke, who is this sort of, especially in the first game, just a vessel for you. It just seemed kind of strange to me that you would get these big name people Karen Fukuhara is in The Boys. She's a really, you know, great actress. And I just thought, Jacob Lee I didn't feel as close to him as I did to Isaac, I guess I would say.
I'm trying to remember anything about him.
he's kind of a rando, isn't he? It always felt to me like it's okay. Like it's never intrusive. I didn't think at any point, oh, this is like a bad performance or this is over the top or something. It was always played straight, not too much humor, but also not too dark and grim. Everything kind of worked, but it also felt a little bit insignificant.
I think we can all agree because I thought Elias stole the show.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with who the actor is, but he did great. That was such a cool character and he felt very real in his scenes. But I do remember one time very early in the game, Elias says something to him, and he says the F word. I won't ruin your young, innocent ears with such language, but he says, "What the F is going on?" And then Jacob goes, "Yeah, what the heck's going on?" And it's like, that's odd. That's like an odd back and forth where he like changed the word. It was like, because I'm sure they recorded separately, but that was the only time it really felt like that. Where he was like, "Yeah, I don't know what the dang heck's happening." It's like, well, okay. Like, I don't know.
Different levels of urgency.
Yeah.
No, he's like, shucks.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We don't know how bad it is yet or anything. Like, I don't know what it was, but it took me out and it was like a 2-second thing. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he shivved a guy. I don't remember, but.
Yeah. I think you're right though. I think Elias did steal the show. And I remember there was one exchange that I thought was kind of nice and natural. And it was between Elias and Jacob. And the whole setup is that Elias is a prisoner who knows everything about the prison. Jacob is a pilot. And so they want to get, they want to work together so that they can get off Callisto. And so they start working. And at one point, Jacob is wondering clearly if he can trust Elias. And Elias says, you know, hey, I'm going to get you to this place so that we can continue our mission here. And Jacob says, why should I trust you? Like, why wouldn't you just turn on me? And Elias just goes, do you know another pilot? And I thought that was a really nice reason for why they should trust each other, because they're in this situation where what else are you going to do? You got to work together on this. So that felt real to me. And I liked that aspect of it.
It mostly felt real and organic, though it also plays it very safe. Like with the characters, the dynamics, and the story development in general, I felt like they're often drawing from established tropes. Up until the very end, they are introducing more and more kind of like typical horror game tropes, which is fine. I mean, they don't have to revolutionize the genre. But considering the expertise that is at the team of Striking Distance, I think they could have done a little bit more if they wanted to really like propose the Callisto Protocol as something that reinvigorates the genre. Then they need to also reinvigorate its narrative tropes in some way that differentiates itself from what has previously been put out there.
I had a lot of issues with this sort of tropes, actually. It's something that was very safe. It's something that definitely felt familiar. But I do get a little bit annoyed with like evil for evil's sake. I'm speaking specifically about like the warden. Or not the warden, excuse me, the captain. I can't remember his name.
Captain Ferris.
And he really is just like, hi, I'm Captain Ferris. I'm the bad guy. And it really felt like right away, I was like, oh, okay. Like, and he was like so dramatic. And in like the very, very beginning, he's just like, oh, I don't know why we're taking you in. We'll get it all squared away. And then Jacob like just says immediately after, he's like, I don't know why this is happening. Then Captain Ferris is like, you're in my world now, boy. And it's like, okay, what is happening? Like, why is
you're
this
so
happening?
Right. That drove me crazy. Because again, to the idea of sort of how do you, I think really where the Callisto Protocol falters for me is the setup. Because if this had been a case where Jacob was a prisoner and he had been there like Elias, and maybe they were friends for 20 years, who knows? They know this place inside and out, and then they have to work together to get out of it. Then Captain Ferris does this thing where when he shows up in the game, he refers to Jacob by his prisoner number, and it's just not earned. It's just, it implies a history that isn't there. And I think when you said evil for evil's sake, that's the nail on the head, because it's exactly just, we need a bad guy here to have a final boss fight. And that felt very just by the numbers for me.
Yeah, there's also no clear-cut motivation for why at the very beginning of the game already, when Jacob arrives, he would be treated so poorly and with such vitriol, even though he hasn't even done anything at this point. And the warden is just like straightforwardly sadistic, you could say. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think I totally agree. The motivation for the antagonists is insufficiently fleshed out. It would have been better if they had an actual credible, believable motivation that brings you into a little bit more of a conflict. But that's maybe exactly what I meant, that they kind of just copy-paste tropes that have been widely established in the genre without doing anything interesting with them.
It's just asking you to rely on your knowledge of the tropes, which is something that always bothers me in not just horror games, but any story where it points to a character and says, this is the antagonist, and you are the protagonist, and you must fight the antagonist. If there's no reason or background or anything like that, it just feels hollow to me. So that was a big problem I had with this game.
And when I make the Callisto Protocol 2, I don't think I'm going to follow in their footsteps. I think I'll do something much different. because I think when you have a character that you don't know, you have so much... There are so many opportunities to make you fall in love with them and get to know them. But even the entire journey with Jacob, you don't know anything about him, and then you learn nothing about him. And I think that is a safe bet, you know, with the tropes where you kind of have like this faceless protagonist, like you mentioned before with Isaac Clarke. But why have a character at all if there's no reason, like, that you care about him, you know? So I just felt like you were saying, Dan, like, maybe he isn't in Maiden. As you play the game, you learn more about his history or kind of why he's there. And it was like a misunderstanding, which is also a trope, right? But it makes you put the character in context as it goes on, as opposed to like, I don't know why I'm here. And then at the end, he's like, I don't know why I was here. And it's, you don't feel like there's any weight on it. And then it's like, they do flashbacks to when, like, Europa, which I believe is another moon. I'm not an astronomer. but I never felt like it mattered. It felt like he was just like the camera a little bit. It's like, look at all this that's going on. My name's Jacob. And then it just never felt like it ever capped. Because I don't know anything about that man. I played that game for like 20, 30 hours. And I don't have any idea who that is.
Yeah, they made him a little bit too interesting for the character to completely disappear in the background. And they made him not interesting enough for me to actually care about his character and about his fate.
You either need to go Isaac Clarke and have him in the first game be just a vessel for you where there's no input, it's just what you have, or you really flesh them out, like in a Silent Hill game where you know who this character is, you understand who they are. And I say Silent Hill because this game reminded me a lot of Downpour, the most recent up to now Silent Hill game set in a prison. There's a character who we know something about, and the villain at the end is sort of a villain for villainy's sake. So there's a lot of 2010s energy from this video game.
May I share something that I found really cool before we go into the entire combat and the actual flow of gameplay? Because I think there's a lot to dissect there. But one thing where I found the Callisto Protocol to nail it quite well is in the domain of the way it implements the technology. It uses the technology of the PS5. I thought especially the lighting effects and the soundscape that it creates, like when you are going through one of the million corridors and you hear like the scraping of something behind the walls and some rumbling in the distance. To me, especially playing it with surround sound, it created a really amazing atmosphere that very much put me into the same kind of anxious state that Dead Space put me in when I played it first.
I liked that there were moments where, so the prisoners all have this item on the back of their neck called the core, which is how you determine how much health you currently have. It's sort of like Isaac's spine in the engineer suit. And there's a mention that it kind of plays with your mind when you first get it installed. And so something I really like, because I played it with my headphones on, was hearing little whispers going through your headphones. So that was, there were a couple of moments where Jacob was kind of being attacked by his past or memories or these little whispers that were saying his name. And I thought that was really well done. So I agree. The soundscape was pretty cool.
I think like aesthetically it hit the nail on the head. Like I think it is beautiful. It is very interesting. But then I don't know if it's always filled, unfortunately. Like you walk into a room and you see like all this cool scenery and sort of the environment. And then you just kind of like, all right, well, moving on. And then you just kind of move on to the next room. I don't feel like it always carries over, but it looks beautiful and it feels very cool. That's sort of my experience with it.
Maybe that was one of the main parts that helped me maintain my enjoyment of the game throughout, because they throw you into all kinds of different set pieces, which in itself I think is quite a feat to accomplish, considering that we're talking about a space prison where it would be very easy to copy and paste corridors after corridors and make it very samey. It partially is that, but they really, I think, do very well in making the individual areas that you progress through feel quite distinct. You got these prison modules that you go through with the cells. You got like grimy, slimy, disgusting sewers. You got a greenhouse unit. You walk on the surface for a short amount of time. And all of these areas, they have kind of their own creepy vibe to it. They all feel very distinct. And that's, to me, it felt a little bit like going on one of these theme park rides where you go through just like different sceneries, you know, and you can just like enjoy almost like the creepy beauty of it.
I will say that I liked when you're on the surface of the moon. That was my favorite part of the game, and it's because I don't even know if this was meant to happen or if this was a visual glitch or something. So maybe you two can shore up my experience here, but when you're, there's a moment when you're on the moon and you're walking through a huge snowstorm. So you can't see in front of you. You just see lights that are set up ahead of you. And there's a moment where the only time I got kind of unsettled was I saw a figure in the distance kind of moving a little bit. And that turned out to be an enemy. But I think, I don't know if it was an artifact or something of this enemy not showing up on time. But there was just one moment where I was looking, you know, attentively at the snowstorm to see if I could see anything. And a figure kind of popped in and out very briefly. And that was the only time where I went, ooh, spooky.
I don't remember seeing that, but that sounds very cool.
Well, the thing is that when it comes to how scary is the Callisto Protocol, then I would say it really depends on what we define as scary, because it's not scary because the encounters are very predictable. The times that you're being attacked by some kind of larvae creature that jumps out of a shelf is just used ad nauseam. And it's always the same, and it's never really threatening. It's just something where you need to hammer the button to get rid of it, and you just jolly move on with your life. I think all of these jumps, all of the jump scares that they use, almost all of them failed for me, just because they were so aggressive. But the atmosphere in itself, like this kind of feeling of I'm trapped in this collapsed prison, or I'm going through this area where a horrible incident has taken place and I need to find my way out. Everything could collapse at any second. This kind of feeling of spookiness, maybe spookiness more than scary, that worked very well for me.
The sense of urgency as you get into like this flesh pit that you have to like work your way through, or some collapsing building. I definitely felt that. That was very cool.
And I guess I didn't go into this with too many expectations. But just my memory of Dead Space. And I remember that Dead Space scared me because the setup of the, I think the ship is the ship called the Ishimura. So the setup of that is that you're coming to it after something horrible has happened. So you're always on the lookout for something and you're piecing things together. That to me defined that as a horror game. Whereas with Callisto Protocol, because you're there when it's happening, it feels much more like an action adventure game. And that's why I think they relied really heavily on jump scares. You mentioned the larva jumping out at you. That happens way too frequently. The only time I think that I felt that spooky atmosphere that you're discussing is about halfway into the game, you go into an underground colony. And that to me was very mysterious. And everything had happened so long ago, you were kind of putting everything together. That to me was where I felt that atmosphere very heavily.
I thought that was very cool, but I did feel like I was sort of just thrust there, and everyone knew what was going on, but I sure didn't. Me, the player. And maybe I don't think this is spoilers or anything, but you get to an abandoned settlement at one point, and your companion knows everything about it, and then Jacob also knows everything about it, which is very odd. There's a very strange like exchange where I believe her name is Danny, if I'm remembering correctly. She says, oh, this is the abandoned colony. And then Jacob's like, oh, the one the prison was built over? And it's like, I didn't know that. Where did you learn that? I didn't know. I had no idea this happened. Like, so everyone's like, ah, yes, of course, the hidden colony. And then they just go through it. And it's just like, okay, this felt very cool, but I didn't feel like anyone was holding my hand through it as I needed them to feel like I'm also a part of this adventure.
Or maybe a possibility to introduce it in a more smooth way would have been to mention it beforehand, before going to that place, that there is this old colony and that it has kind of a role to play, so that you kind of have it on the horizon already. Like, this is something that is going to come in. And then when you reach it, then that can effectively trigger some kind of spooky atmosphere, or amplify it, because you know, oh, this is the place that everyone talked about. You know, and I'm there now, and anything might happen.
I'm surprised. That's such a good point, because I'm surprised that either A, the warden in his hologram messages to you didn't say, Black Iron Prison, built on the shattered remains of the Arcus colony, you know, or if Elias had said, oh, I thought that there was a way out through the old colony, but I never got there, right? Just something like that to kind of set it up. I definitely agree. I feel like that was missing.
Well, shall we take a brief break before we then dissect the combat and the moment-to-moment flow of gameplay?
Let's do it.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we're back with our review on the Callisto Protocol. So far, we fleshed out that we've got quite something to criticize about the way that this game implements tropes, but really doesn't go anywhere interesting with it. We also pointed out that it is fairly atmospheric, but still leaves quite some things on the table. And now we want to turn our attention to the actual combat and the moment-to-moment gameplay. Because, Richard, you already said that the Callisto Protocol, it does make some interesting and very strange decisions in the implementation of its moment-to-moment combat.
I did accidentally get a little ahead of myself in the intro and just do my whole spiel. But I do stand by it. It feels very cool. It feels like they're trying to do a lot, but I just don't feel like it's always implemented in the most convenient or like the smoothest way.
First of all, to just kind of talk about what's available, right? You have the melee combat, which is, I think, it's interesting where you get kind of a riot baton and you're attacking these enemies and you can open them up to weak points so that you can quickly shoot those weak points, which I found a very cool concept. I like that idea a lot, where it rewards you switching quickly between melee and shooting combat. But there's a couple of different guns that are all, they all feel pretty distinct. I would say the two, kind of the Magnum and the pistol, feel very similar to me, but otherwise there's a shotgun, there's an assault rifle. So that aspect of it is nice and simple. I think where it falls down is that I don't know, maybe you'll agree with me on this, both of you. It felt like there were two competing visions for how the combat was supposed to work. And they just kind of, they ended it at a point where no one really came out on top, because there's a lot of enemies all at once, but there's no way to quickly switch between them. And I think that may have been an attempt to keep the survival horror aspect of being overwhelmed. But to me, it just got frustrating after a certain point, because it's kind of grasping at more complexity, but it doesn't give you the tools to do it correctly. And that felt like I was more frustrated than anything going through the combat most of the time.
I 100% agree. As soon as more than one enemy lunges at you, and Richard, you said this already at the beginning, as soon as more than one enemy happens to come at you, it's over. basically. You can't really effectively defend yourself. It's just a matter of pure luck whether you're going to make it out of that situation or whether you coincidentally have a couple of shotgun shells that you can just blast into them. Because the melee combat, I think, is strange. At the very beginning, when you get that riot baton, it gives you this tutorial where it says you can dodge by pressing the stick left or right, but the timing doesn't matter, and you always have to switch between left and right. You can never dodge in the same direction twice. And to me, that felt kind of like, why would you take, like, dodge? The only interesting thing about dodging is the timing. by taking that out of it, it's like, I was in fights where it was just like, I'm just going to melee them because I don't have enough ammo or don't want to waste my ammo on them. And it's just endlessly switching the stick left and right, and then punch. And that way you never get hit unless there's more than one enemy on screen. It was totally weird, I think.
I definitely agree with feeling like it was two visions coming together, because I feel like the shooting aspect is like a solid enough third-person shooter. It might not be like immaculate or super interesting, but it's like solid enough. And the combat is a little odd, but it's relatively tight. Like, it works. It might need some tweaks to perfect it, but putting them together really takes away from both of them. Like, it makes the melee combat a little less interesting. It makes the shooting a little less interesting because you have to get up close and personal. And I think it would really benefit breaking up those, like, group fights. Because I think there would be something sort of beautiful with, like, getting in this one-on-one combat. And I know it's kind of cheesy and video gamey, but everyone just kind of waiting their turn. Because I think there's, like, this cool moment where you beat the enemy and you're like, ah, did it. And then you, like, the camera, like, shifts to this other guy. And you're like, all right, let's do it again. And then I think there's, like, this cool intensity there. Not very survival horror-y, but it's a good way to, like, keep that combat feeling interesting without being locked into this fight and then having one person just shove you or hit you, and then it's like, okay, cool, I guess I'm just taking damage now and I have to just deal with this.
I need to compare this, because I felt it crying out at several points in the game, to the early Resident Evil games, or even the remake of 2 and 3, where I'm not talking about, you know, Biohazard and Village, because those are much more fast-paced, but the original Resident Evil games, that they made you conserve ammunition because ammunition was effective, right? There's a balance that you have to hit there, where I often found myself in Callisto Protocol saving ammo, but then feeling betrayed because when I would use it, it would do just as much or even less than the melee attack. And so I think it's trying to incentivize you to learn the switch up of hitting somebody, opening up their weak point, and then shooting them once, which does work fairly well, but it's so inconsistent that it never got there for me. And I found myself being really displeased most of the time.
I think here applies the same kind of criticism that we've remarked on when we spoke about the narrative and the character development already, because there would have been two ways to go. Either, when it comes to the melee combat, you go in the direction of more complexity and you allow players to have more freedom to dodge around and to maybe improvise with, I don't know, like a light and a heavy attack and such things, which is all there, but it's kind of like very pre-scripted and you can only use it in exactly the right points. Or you go in a more simplistic direction, which I might have even preferred, where it's like no riot baton at all. All you have is maybe the ability to use your gravitational glove, which we can mention in just a second, to briefly push enemies back, like almost like a burst forward, where you can push several enemies a couple of steps back, and then it needs to recharge for a minute or something. So you can just push them back, and then you can continue and shoot them to get them off your back. So I think there would have been many ways to fix or to improve upon this clash of combat concepts.
Well, on the topic of the glove, I found that the most fun I had in the game was using that, and I felt like it was maybe underutilized. I always tried to put, because you can upgrade all of your weapons, I always tried to put the few credits that I would find in the game into the glove and making it better, because it's, you basically have Jedi powers. You can direct, you can kind of gravitationally pull people to you and then throw them away. And the most fun I had in the game was when there were environmental obstacles that you could throw them into or throw them off of. There's one particular fight that I actually enjoyed quite a bit up until the boss portion of it, where you're on a moving tram and a bunch of enemies are crawling over the side and you can just pick them up and throw them off as the tram is moving. And I had a lot of fun with that. So I think that the glove was a great idea.
The glove is actually a direct carryover from Dead Space as well. And I think that's one of the best choices that they made to keep that kind of mechanic in. Because, yeah, it's super satisfying. You have like these very conveniently placed open like traps, death traps.
Shredder machines, like saw machines, yeah.
Why ever you would want in such a facility a gigantic rolls with spikes that just shred everything. But yeah. Throwing enemies, I remember there's a sequence that was already trailered beforehand, so I guess it doesn't harm spoiling it, where you can grab these disgusting mutant creatures and you can throw them into these waltzes. And then they get like grinded to pieces and then they get splattered all over the place. And of course, that feels incredibly satisfying because it's just such a nice way. They would overpower you any other way, but there you can just pick them up and whoosh.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was very satisfying. Boss fights, on the other hand, are terrible in this game. I haven't played. They're so dumb. It actually impressed me.
Stefan, I'm gonna give you. I don't often do this, but I'm going to correct you. You said boss fights, plural. There is boss fight in this game.
Okay,
that happens many times.
That happens many times. Yes, yes.
I was gonna lean in and correct there. I was like, well, it's actually the same boss, but you already got there. Because I know what part you're talking about with the tram, and then the boss enemy drops, and I did think that fight was pretty. It was kind of fun. It wasn't
the first
great.
Time you see it.
Yeah, but then he just started showing up, and I was like, okay, like because. Another thing that this game does not have going for it is diversity in its like enemy types, and it becomes glaring the longer it goes. Like you're seeing the same enemies, and it becomes so like it's just a formula. Like you beat this enemy, you beat this enemy. Oh, there's an enemy you can't see until it gets close. You beat that enemy, you fight the same boss again, and then you just move on. And there's nothing really mixes it up. I don't even think of any like. I can't even think of any like interesting ones that like stood out to me because they all were just gun fodder, I suppose.
Yeah, including the boss fights, because to round off that point, the reason why the boss fights are, in my opinion, so dumb is because they literally are just a gigantic globby monster that you need to just, shoot all your ammo into while always, you run five steps, then you turn around, then shoot, and then you run five steps. And you always run around. Every single boss fight for me was always running around like a large crate or something. It felt a little bit like a playground thing where it's like, catch me if you can. And it always made the situation feel kind of silly and underwhelming. Though I must say, in its defense, there's something that I realized that helped me a little bit in these moments. And I just want to, for anyone out there who might still want to play the game after we completely destroyed it in our review. So if you shoot the boss a sufficient amount of times, then the boss will just collapse and briefly like kneel down. And then you can go in and put in some melee hits. And if you do that, the boss gets finished off a lot faster than if you just keep shooting shotgun shells into it.
And I think that's the perfect round off to the point about the melee, too, is that, again, it seemed literally, oh, now I'm starting to think it's smart and how foolish it is. It's two visions coming together because that boss is called, what, like Two-Head or something, Two-Face, something Two-Face. Like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is genuinely a monster out of the Thing remake from 2011. So again, we're keeping up with that aesthetic of 2008 to 2012. But it just felt like, as you mentioned, Stefan, it rewards you for shooting and then doing melee and then shooting again. But it's not clever. It's just shoot it until you can melee it and then shoot it again until you can melee it. There's no, even like a, I don't know, a weak point, or if you could lure it into something like the spiky walls, if it was, if you're if your baton was powerful enough to knock it back into it, maybe you could play around with that, but it's just lose all your ammo in it and then beat it up.
Well, one part about the combat that I found, though, quite nice is the possibility of enemies mutating by tentacles spawning out of them. This is basically like a similar system to Dead Space, because in Dead Space, the idea was always dismemberment. You need to cut off the enemy limbs, and then they will change their behavior until you cut the rest of them off and then ultimately kill them. In the Callisto Protocol, it's more like, if you injure an enemy to a certain degree, then tentacles will like just burst out of their chest, and then you've got a short time window to finish them off. Otherwise, they will mutate into a stronger enemy and then attack you even more ferociously. And I think that's a really cool system, because it always put this sense of urgency into combat. I've injured that enemy, I see the tentacles, and it's like, oh no, I need to finish that guy off while keeping the others at bay. I found that a very smart system.
It's also a really cool, because I agree, I think that that's a great idea. And it's a good evolution of, again, the Resident Evil trope of, you need to burn the zombie so that it doesn't come back as a redhead and be, you know, or a crimson head, redhead, like a red-haired girl. You don't want it to come back as a crimson head zombie because it's stronger. So you have to, once you knock down a zombie, you burn it, and then that one's done for the game. So I like that it kind of made that a real-time concern, where you had to clock how many of the monsters were starting to mutate. That added a bit of urgency and anxiety that I didn't find elsewhere in the game.
And I think the game is a little, I don't know if the word is cheeky, but if you shoot the enemy's arms off, much like Dead Space, the enemy dies. But they never say that. They never like come out and just outright say it like the way Dead Space did. So if you're in melee and you knock off both of their arms, they'll just die, even if they like, blow up their head and they still have their arms. And it's like, I get it. It's like a little Easter egg just for me that only I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what can they do when they don't have any arms anymore? They're like the Black Knight, you know? Well. And like, I'm gonna spit in your face and blind you.
I think that'd be too depressing if you just knocked out the limbs off, they just sat there, and then you see him again. And you're like, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do.
Let's call it a draw. Well, one enemy type that also stood out to me was I'm going to just call them the clickers, because they try to introduce a variety of enemies, but they are, as we've already established, they're copy and pasted enemies, very much trope. They're not copy and pasted, but they are tropes, video game tropes and archetypes that are just implemented pretty much exactly in the same way like it works in other games. So there's an enemy that looks cool, it looks disgusting, it looks frightening in your flashlight, but it reacts only to sound. And if you crouch, it won't hear you. And you can just very slowly go to every single one and stab them in the back. Surprisingly, no other enemy around hears the death screams of the one that you are killing. And so it just slows you down. It just takes a lot of time. And that, I felt, was like, that was really annoying, since they throw so many of them at you.
You know, that was genuinely the worst time I had in this game, were those sequences. And it's funny, because the more frustrated I get with a game, the more I turn to game studies terminology stuff on. So I felt quite a bit of ludonarrative dissonance playing this game, because when Stefan mentioned that you can stab enemies from behind and you can kill them, but the problem is they're massive mutants that you need to be very forceful in killing. So Jacob will stab them, but it's not like, you know, it's not like Assassin's Creed where you just kind of quietly kill somebody. You are violently stabbing them multiple times with them screaming. And there will be another of these clicker enemies 2 inches away from you. And it's basically saying like, oh, that must have been the wind.
And Jacob is not quiet either. So you, the character, are yelling. The enemy is yelling. And this other guy's just like, meh, I don't know. What's going on over here? And then it's like, moseys off.
I mean, I'm glad that they did that, because otherwise it would have been endlessly frustrating to go through these sequences. Or, and this is, again, one of these situations, they could have gone more complex with this by saying, maybe we should implement a proper stealth system so that you can actually hide behind stuff or something, which actually doesn't work in the game, because as soon as they've seen you or heard you, they're going to follow you everywhere, even if you start crouching later on. And I think that's just a bit of a shame. There would have been quite a chance of developing this enemy variety further, of taking every single enemy and putting them in a little bit more interesting settings, playing into their strengths and into the variety.
Well, and what's so strange, because you mentioned the stealth aspect, they have a setup for that at the beginning when there are these security droids that are patrolling the prison. And before you get a gun, you're completely outclassed by them. And even when you have one, if they notice you, they're going to kill you basically in one hit. So there's a point early on where you do have to crouch and stay away from this robot. So there was setup for it. And then they turn you into this clicker scenario. And it's just, just go behind them one by one and stab them all. You'll be just fine.
I was not super excited about that part because I'm not really into stealth games. I've only played The Last of Us once. I didn't play it every time it gets remade. But I was like, okay, cool. Fungus enemy. I get it. We all get it, right? They come out of a wall of fungus, and then you stab them. We get it. And then I did that little area, and it's only like a couple of rooms. And then I just moved on. I was like, was that it? Was that the whole, it didn't come back again. It wasn't like an important part of the game going forward. It was this little blurb. And then it's just like, all right, back to hitting and shooting. And I just felt like, It was like a mini game a little bit, where it's like sneak up and hit triangle and then move on. And I just felt I was already getting a little frustrated with the game, but at that point I was just like, are you kidding? This is such a goof thing to do. I don't know.
Yeah. I had the exact reaction, Richard, where I was, as you say, you're already frustrated and then that happened. And I think that kind of put me over the edge a little bit.
I'm worrying right now that I might have missed something. Have you ever tried in these areas where clicker enemies, I'm just going to call them that, where they are around, to pick up an object and throw it into a different direction and they would like run there?
It doesn't work. Because
okay. It doesn't work.
Because again, the idea of the noise triggering them auto-tracking you. So you have to remain crouching, and as soon as you do anything other than stab them in the back, one of them is going to notice you, and then the rest of them will notice you.
That's such a shame, because they have the system of the gravitational glove where you can pick up objects, and it would have made the sequences already a bit more interesting if you could have just pulled objects near you and just thrown them in down the corridors, and then they would all be like running past you. You know, that would have already made for a cool sequence or two.
I tried that because I had that thought, it's the perfect setup, right? I have this gravity glove. Let me, like Harry Potter in the Chamber of Secrets, throw something over here and get their attention and then run around. And in that sequence in particular, you mentioned the wall spikes. There's a bunch of those spikes all over the place. But I quickly found out in trying to quietly, impale people on those spikes, that doesn't work. So clearly that's meant for if you get caught and you have to engage in combat, then you can use them. So it's, again, two visions coming together and not working out.
And not to fix the game too much, but wouldn't it be interesting if you could push a clicker enemy onto those spikes and then it yells and then they get brought to that enemy that's in peril and you could sneak off? Like that would be a cool little like workaround.
Use it as bait.
I don't think it was even considered, like on the cutting room floor. I don't think that was even brought up. It was just, I love The Last of Us. Let's stab him. And maybe I'm being hypercritical. Maybe that's not fair. But
that brings us to a larger point about the game, which is just missed opportunity and half-thought ideas. Because I agree, that would have been great. And the frustrating thing to me is that when you have a game where it presents you with all of these tools and it presents you with all these scenarios, but then it doesn't do any of them, and it doesn't even allow you to try to do them, that's where I get frustrated. I don't mind walking simulators. I don't mind games that are set up to have you play it a certain way. I mean, I'm playing through Crisis Core Reunion right now. That is, you have a sword and magic. That's all you have. You know, it keeps you very within a corridor of capability. But the Callisto Protocol has the illusion of fun gameplay all over the place. And all of these kind of ideas that are thrown in could be fleshed out in a really interesting way, but they never are. And that's when I start to get kind of upset with a game. when I say to myself, it seems like you wanted me to do this. Why aren't you letting me do it?
It leaves a lot on the table indeed, yeah. A lot to be desired. I must say that one positive point that I still wanted to mention before we go in the direction of rounding off our review is that I actually enjoyed the walking speed.
I knew you would say this.
Because the thing is that so many games suffer from environments being too big and the character being too fast. So that it always feels like, why would a character constantly run around? And I'm longing for more like realistic walking speed in video games or walking pace. Callisto Protocol does this quite well, I think. Like, Jacob is very authentically slow in his spacesuit. And he's not like a super agile dude that jumps around the rooms or something. He's pretty like, you know, you can feel the weight of his suit and everything and the equipment that he's carrying at every step. That doesn't mean I necessarily like the fact that it constantly makes you crawl and squeeze through tight spots, because that is something that in general I don't mind, but it's used very extensively in the game. Like every 2 minutes you have to squeeze through something. But the general pace of exploration, I enjoy that very much.
As soon as I was walking around, I genuinely thought to myself, oh, Stefan loves this.
Yes.
What's the over-under? I would say a solid 30% of this game is shimmying through walls.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the game is cinematic to a fault. I think it tries to be such an experience, but all it does is it interrupts gameplay and it interrupts moving, because it is fun. It's kind of fun to move around, like Stefan was saying. Like, the speed is very good. The environment's very good. But then it like puts you in these scenarios where you're in like shimmying through a wall, or you're crawling through a vent and there's like a little cutscene to turn the corner. And it's like, why couldn't I just turn the corner? Like, at what point is that the control being taken away? And then we touched on it earlier, but those bugs that lunge out at you and you just tap triangle, and they're just a hindrance. They're not anything. They're just like, they're almost a jump scare almost. But after the first couple, you think to yourself, oh, this again. And there's these enemies that will grab you and you just have to tap triangle or tap the button to have them let it go. And I just felt like, why interrupt your game with so much stuff that isn't fun and isn't gameplay? And I just don't understand that mentality.
I totally agree. And I think that for me, my round out for it would be, I think I grew to resent it as I kept playing through it. And the reason for that was, I think that I slowly realized that this was not any kind of evolution from Dead Space. And that bummed me out, because Dead Space is such a good game and full of so many great ideas. And the worst thing I can say about the Callisto Protocol is also the best, which is it reminded me of playing a game in 2010. And it's 2022. And I think that with so many other horror games that are so much more effective, so many other action games that are so much more driven, maybe this is the curse of having just come off God of War Ragnarok. I don't know. But this is something that I felt was half-baked, from a different era in a bad way, that took no lessons from the things that may not have worked from its predecessor, and just compounded and compounded to a point where I felt I had no connection to it. I was frustrated more often than not, and I just wish that the setting and the panopticon idea that you mentioned, Stefan, had been the focus, because that I thought was going to be, and then it just was not.
I see it in a bit more of a positive light, as in, it is redundant in many ways, but it's still a good space horror game. Like, if you are into space horror stuff and grinding creatures in gigantic spiked walls or something, then this is totally a fun game to play. One thing that makes me hopeful about it is that it appears like the devs are really listening to some player feedback, and they've already implemented some quick fixes to issues that were criticized. For example, in reviews that were released previously, you would often hear that a problem is that the weapon switching takes too long, and they fixed that a little bit. They made the animation a little bit faster so that you can get through it. So clearly they're paying attention to what people are saying. They won't overhaul the entire game, of course, but that makes me a little bit optimistic that at least the small aspects will be fixed. And one thing that makes me really scared for the future of this game is the fact that we do have, in addition to the full priced $70, we have, almost $30 season pass that's already up, that you can already purchase. And we've got clear indications that they are going to focus a lot on online stuff. And I just can't see how this would really work well. I don't quite understand why they are doing this. Because if there are any lessons to be taken from Dead Space, then it's don't do the online stuff. That really didn't work with Dead Space, right? Turning Dead Space into our major franchise that's going to be like a multimedia thing, that's going to be this big AAA video game that everyone's supposed to buy, that was part of the reason what made it fall apart. And I just wish that the Callisto Protocol would learn from that a little bit more and would say, let's focus on this niche. There is a market for space horror games, for gory space horror games. Let's tap into that.
Yeah, we did a whole Plus episode about why that making it a AAA big cinematic blockbuster really kneecapped Dead Space. And I just already see them doing that with the Callisto Protocol. So yeah, I agree, Stefan. I appreciate that your thoughts are a little more positive than mine too, because I think, I don't know. I know I'm going to play it at least one more time. So maybe I'll try to look at it from a different angle.
I'm just glad all three of us got the season pass already, so we can all talk about it again later. All three.
Well, thank you so very much for listening to our review of the Callisto Protocol. Please share your thoughts on the matter by going to studyingpixels.com/contact or joining our Discord server, which we have just recently invigorated. You can find the link to the Discord server directly on our website. There's a little Discord icon that you can click on. Next week, we're going to do our Christmas special, where Dan and me evaluate the 10 predictions that we made about 2022, and we evaluate them, and we make the next 10 predictions for 2023. It's sure to be an exciting episode, so stick around for that and see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.